Okay, the topic of tonight's shiur, the secret key to Parnassa. The topic, of course, is one that weighs very heavily on pretty much everyone's mind. I guess for the Talmidot in the room who are not yet in an age where this is directly their responsibility primarily, it may weigh on their minds a little bit less. I promise you, girls, in a few years, Bezrat Hashem, this will be a major, major concern. Certainly the people of my generation that are in the room understand very well what it is to have to support a family and to have to support children and to worry about what's going to be. It's something that's on everyone's mind. And as I'll explain to you in a moment, it's also a topic that Mrs. Brasky touched on a little bit. I'll touch on it a little bit also. It's a topic that's particularly relevant to Hoshana Rabbah. But I put out an advertisement about tonight's program, and I wrote that I was giving a shiur on the secret key to Parnassa. I got an email very shortly after sending out the announcement by a good friend of MMY named Mr. Ellie Lassen from Baltimore. Whose daughter was here a couple years ago, and he's certainly a good friend of ours. I'm sure that if he was in Israel now, he'd be here this evening, and perhaps he'll be listening to the shiur on the internet, and here I gave him a shout-out. He immediately sent me an email because I guess he was struck by the title, and it seemed like a little bit out of character for the type of thing I was going to say. First he sent me an email where he said, well, you know, I always tell my friends, I guess he was reacting to, I'll just tell you what he said. He said, I always tell my friends that I think the best segula, the best secret weapon or secret trick to a good parnasa is to get a job and work for a living. And I guess he is referring to people that he feels think they're going to get a parnasa a different way. So I wrote back to him, not wanting to give away any cards before the shiur. I wrote back to him that I essentially agree with that, but of course it's more complicated, and there is something to talk about, something we can learn about besides that. He then sent me back another email, asked me if I was going to discuss a minhag that you may have heard of known as the Schlüssel Challah. Anyone know what a Schlüssel Challah is?
Yeah.
Right? Minhag that people, you put a key in the challah, I think it's the Shabbos after Pesach.
Yeah.
So I told him, believe it or not, and this, I'm sure, also surprised him a little bit. I told him that that also is somewhat related to what I'm going to talk about in the shiur. Although both points, I think, are valid. And b'chol zot, I think there's what to talk about. And I will discuss the secret key to Parnassa. But, what was that? Oh, yeah, that was intentional. I will discuss the secret key to Parnassa. But before doing that, let's just, for a moment or two, let's just understand why Hoshana Rabbah is a particularly opportune time to discuss this. We mentioned already, I alluded to it briefly in my opening remarks, and Mrs. Brodsky also alluded to the fact that rain is a very central theme on Hoshana Rabbah, and of course also on Shmini Atzeret, when we formally begin the winter season, we begin to say Mashiv HaRuach U'Morid HaGashem, and although we don't formally begin to request rain in our daily tefillah until Zayin Cheshvan in Eretz Yisrael and even later in Chutz La'aretz, we don't begin to say V'tein Talam Matar for a few weeks still, but we do on Shmini Atzeret recite the tefillah Geshem, praying for a very rainy winter, and therefore certainly the concept of rain is very, very relevant here. The reason for this, it's based on a Mishnah, Masechet Rosh Hashanah, Daf Tet Zayin Amud Aleph. The Mishnah tells us, Be'arba prakim ha'olam nidon. The world is judged on four different points during the year. Be'pesach al ha'tvuah. On Pesach, God judges the world and decides whether the crops are going to be good that year or not. And the reason for that, assumedly, is because that's when crops begin to grow here in Eretz Yisrael. Be'atzeret on Shavuot al perot ha'ilan. At the beginning of the summer, when the fruits on the trees are beginning to develop, God judges and decides whether we're going to have a good crop of fruits or not. Berosh Hashanah, Kol ba'ei olam ovrin lefanav kivnei maron. And Rosh Hashanah, all people in the world pass by God one at a time, and each are judged individually. Uvechag and on Sukkot nidonin al hamayim. Okay, so there's 4 points of judgment, and Sukkot is the time in which we're judged for water. And the Gemara here has a lengthy discussion, which I will not go into now, trying to reconcile what does it mean that each one of us is judged in Rosh Hashanah, and yet we're judged at different times of the year as a group for all these different things, and how those things work out together. That I won't go into now. But what I do want to focus on just for a minute is the fact that we're judged on Sukkot for water. That, first of all, according to a Braita and the Gemara here, is the reason why on Sukkot there's a very special mitzvah in the Beit HaMikdash of Nisuch HaMayim. There's the Simchat Beit HaShoeva, the great celebration where water is drawn from the Shiloach pool at the bottom of the hill where the girls and I will be, God willing, on Wednesday afternoon. From there, all the way up to the Beit HaMikdash, and we'll actually be able to walk on the very road that that procession took place on. And then, when it gets up to the Beit HaMikdash, the water is actually poured on the Mizbeach. Normally we pour wine on the Mizbeach on Sukkot. In addition to the wine, we also pour water. And this, according to the Gemara here, is because it's on Sukkot that we're being judged for water. It's also probably the central reason for the Arba Minim. The Arba Minim are basically about water. And certainly, as I mentioned earlier, the minhag of the Aravot on Hoshana Rabbah seems to be based on that. Why are we judged for water, particularly on Sukkot? So part of it has to do, undoubtedly, with the climate and the agricultural cycle here in Eretz Israel. The same way on Pesach, we're judged for Tzvuah, for produce, because that's when the grains begin to grow. And on Shavuot, we're judged for Perot Ha'ilan, for fruits of trees, because that's when they begin to grow. So on Hoshana, on Sukkot, which is the beginning of the rainy season, so that's when we're judged for rain. But perhaps there's something else as well. Sukkot is also Chag HaAsif. Sukkot is the link between the past year and the future year. And a farmer on Chag HaAsif, on Sukkot, a farmer has been working all year, has gathered in all of his crops. People feel the wealthiest when they're farmers in Eretz Yisrael, at least, around this time of year. That's when the storehouses are filled. And if it's been a good year of Bezrat Hashem, the storehouses are overflowing with grains and with food products. And people feel very, very happy. That's why Sukkot is Zman Simchatenu. And perhaps Dafka on Sukkot, that's why we go out into the Sukkah, when a person feels perhaps very, very secure and very, very fulfilled in his material situation, that's a time to go out into the Sukkah. Even if I may be leaving behind a beautiful home, I go out into the very simple hut of the Sukkah to remind myself that really, ultimately, the only thing that's over me, protecting me, is not the well-insulated roof that I might have built for myself in the house, but really only the shade of the Schach, which represents the Shekhinah. And a person who's on Sukkot, Dafka at the time of Chag HaAsif, if we're able to show that we have a proper attitude towards the material wealth that Hashem has given us, so that is the time in which we're judged by the extent to which we're able to do that, and therefore the extent to which we are worthy of being blessed with such things also in the future. So rain is a central theme on Sukkot, and particularly on Hoshana Rabbah and Shmini Atzeret. Geshem, though, is also Geshem, of course, meaning rain, is often viewed as the model for all of what we call Gashmiut. I don't know if you ever noticed it, but Geshem and Gashmiut is the same word. Gashmiut means all material wealth, all material sustenance. The rain is basically the symbol of all of that. And in modern times, you know, we may have the illusion, you know, in ancient times it was very, very clear to people why they needed rain. If it didn't rain, you would starve. There'd be nothing to drink, there'd be nothing to eat. And a drought meant a famine. Modern technology has enabled us to delude ourselves somewhat into thinking that this isn't really so necessary anymore. We can always pump out water from someplace else. We can always import food. We can always desalinate water. We can even import water. Remember a few years ago here in Israel, they were talking about shipping water here from Turkey in old oil tankers, importing water. That's when we still thought the Turks were our friends. So we figured we could buy water from them. And, you know, we figure, eichshehu, we can solve the problem. The last few years in Eretz Israel, I think, have taught us that even that's not true. And Baruch Hashem, we had a good winter last year. If it hadn't been, the Kinneret was about to be destroyed, basically. We're a few centimeters above what they call the black line, by which if the Kinneret drops below that, the entire lake will be ruined, they claim, irreparably. And Baruch Hashem, we had a good winter. And I think we're about a meter above the black line now. And Bezrat Hashem will have another good winter now. But even if we've lost, so even the most basic level of being dependent on rain, I think we've come to understand, with all of our technology, we still need the rain. But certainly beyond that, I think the events of recent years in the world economy have made all of us aware very, very acutely of the fact that with all of our technology, with all of our ways of solving problems, we're still very, very much, we're very vulnerable. I think all of us feel it individually when we think about the economic situation. And also on the national level, we've seen entire countries on the brink of bankruptcy, and the threat of global recession, or maybe even, God forbid, another Great Depression. And nobody really knows what to do. And all these very, very intelligent people have tried all sorts of things that, you know, sometimes seem to be working, and maybe they are working, maybe they're not working. And in the end of the day, all of this is very, very much hanging in the balance. So when we talk about being judged for her mayim on Sukkot, we're not only talking about mayim in a literal sense, we're not only talking about geshem, we're talking about gashmiut. This is the time when the entire world is being judged for parnasa, and therefore this is a time when we should really think about these type of things, and that's why I chose to speak about this tonight. Okay. So, I promised information on the secret key to Parnassa. And here it is. There is a secret key. And the information is that we don't have it. But it exists. Says the Talmud in Masechet Tanit, Daf Bet Amud Aleph. What was that? I missed a good line? Okay. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Gimel Maftechot, Shalosh Maftechot, Biyado Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shelo Nimseru Biyad Shaliach. There are three keys that God never gives over to any messenger. God has many, many messengers. He has shlichim that He uses to carry out His will. Sometimes these messengers appear in the form of divine beings or angels. Avram Avinu saw a malachim. Yoshua saw a malach. Manoach and his wife saw a malach. Sometimes those are the forms in which God's messengers take. Sometimes human beings are messengers of God. Sometimes they realize this. Sometimes they don't realize it, but they carry out God's will anyway. Sometimes entire nations can be messengers of God's will. But there are three keys, says Rabbi Yochanan, that Hashem keeps very close to Himself. He doesn't give them to any messengers. He controls these three things directly and personally. And what are they? Ve'elu hein, mafteach shel gishamim, the key to rain. U'mafteach shel chaya, the key to childbirth. Umafteach shel tchiyat ha-meitim, and the key towards the resurrection of the dead. These three things can't be done through a shaliach. No human being has ever been able to figure out how to manipulate these things. We can help a little bit perhaps, but ultimately we cannot create a person. We certainly cannot bring a person back from the dead, and we can't really make it rain either. These things remain in God's hands directly. And later on, the Gemara points out that some of the other rabbis in Eretz Yisrael, b'ma'arava amri af mafteach shel parnasa. Some of the other rabbis said there's actually a fourth key that God also doesn't give over, and that's the key to parnasa. That also He doesn't give to a shaliach. And they want to know, why didn't Rabbi Yochanan count that one? And the Gemara says, because Rabbi Yochanan did count that one. Rabbi Yochanan, Maitam alo kachashiv laha, why doesn't he count the key to Parnassah as a fourth key which God keeps to himself? Because Amar lecha, Gishamim hainu Parnassah. Rabbi Yochanan said, I already told you that God keeps for himself the key to Gishamim, the key to rain. And as we mentioned earlier, rain is really Parnassah. So there are three keys, there are four keys, however you want to look at it. Either way, the key to Parnassah is one of those keys that God keeps for himself. So there is a secret key, but we don't have it. Why do you think that is? Why dafka these three things does Hashem insist on controlling directly and not working through intermediaries to carry out his will as he usually does? What's the common thread between Mafteach shel chaya, childbirth, Mafteach shel tchiyat hametim, and Mafteach shel gishamim / parnasa? Why are these things that God... Yeah, Eliana?
I mean, it's all like bringing to life everything.
I think so. I think that's it. We're talking about the beginning of our lives. We're talking about what happens after the end of our lives. And we're talking about sustaining our life throughout our lives. That's what we're talking about. And perhaps on these most basic needs that we have, even things like health, which are extremely important, are still not as immediate as these very, very most basic things. This is our existence itself. And perhaps Hashem wants to make clear, when it comes to these matters, it's true for everything else also. But when it comes to these matters, He wants to make sure, perhaps, that we see very, very clearly that there's one source for life, and there's only one source. So if that's the case, yeah? The Gemara asked that question also. You look at the Gemara there. Okay? Gemara asked that question and answered it, but I'm not going to go into it now. Take a look at the Gemara in Daf Bet Am Tan. Okay? So, if that's the case, I should end this year right now, but I still have another 20 minutes, and I never end early. So, what else is there to talk about? I built this whole thing up. I'm going to tell you about the secret key, and I told you about the secret key. It's in God's hands. End of story. What's there to talk about? I think there is what to talk about. And what I'd like to do in the next few minutes is just learn with you, and that's what I handed out. Well, let's start with, the main thing I want to learn with you is Shmot Perek Tetzayin. This is the story of the man. This is one of the first times as a nation that we came into direct contact with the need for Parnassah. After all, in Mitzrayim we were slaves, and slaves don't have very happy lives. But the one thing that slaves dafka don't need to worry about is their livelihood. And we see they understood that. Every time they ran out of food, their immediate reaction was, let's run back to Mitzrayim. We never had a problem there. Even in contemporary times, there's such a phenomenon, right? We know that there's all kinds of studies that show that people who get released from prison sometimes commit crimes intentionally just so they can go back to prison because they don't know how to... In prison, they didn't have to be responsible for themselves. People gave them all their meals and took care of all their needs. It's very, very difficult, right? When a person's free, a person has to deal with it themselves. So here we read, Vayisume Elim, this is just a few weeks after Yitziat Mitzrayim, one month exactly after Yitziat Mitzrayim. Vayilonu kol adat bnei Yisrael Moshe ve'alaron b'midbar vayomru aleihem bnei Yisrael mi ten mutenu b'yad Hashem b'yaretz Mitzrayim b'shivtenu al sira basar b'yochleinu lechem lasova ki yotzeitem otanu el midbar hazeh lamit et kol hakal hazeh v'rav. As I just mentioned, they ran out of food. They brought matzot from Mitzrayim. Those matzot lasted a couple of weeks, perhaps. Along the way, they also came to a place where they had some date trees, it says. But now, they're in the thick of the desert, and they have nothing. And their immediate reaction is, let's go back to Mitzrayim. This isn't going to work. You're going to kill us here, Moshe. We're starving. So there's a specific problem that needs to be solved. There's no food. Now, Hashem can obviously solve that problem. And he could have solved that problem in any number of ways. And it didn't require an open miracle necessarily. He could have brought them to an oasis where there was food. He could have sent a caravan of people to sell them food. All sorts of things he could have done. And normally we know, Chazal tell us that when Hashem, even when he does a miracle, he usually attempts to do the miracle under the guise of nature. It's not usually the first choice to do an open supernatural miracle. But in this case, Hashem chooses to do so by providing the man. And not only that, not only is the man openly and one might think unnecessarily supernatural, the man had some very, very unusual qualities. And it seems that the man was meant, first and foremost, the people might have thought it was meant to solve their physical need, and of course it did, but I think even more than that, the man was meant as an educational device. The man was really meant to serve a spiritual need, to teach us some lessons. And you see this already from Pasuk Dalet when Hashem describes to Moshe how he's going to solve the problem. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, hineni mamtir lachem lechem min hashamayim. Just think of that expression, lechem min hashamayim, bread from heaven. Bread falling out of the sky. The symbolism in that is so clear it doesn't need to be described. The people need bread, I'm going to give them bread, and they're going to know exactly where the bread comes from. Lechem min hashamayim. Every day the people will go out, the bread will fall from the sky, they'll go collect it. Lima'an. And I'm doing this in order to, what would you expect the end of the pasuk to be? Why am I doing this? In order to give them food, right? They're starving. That's not what he says. I'm not worried about them starving, God says. I can provide food. That's not a problem. I'm doing this in this manner. Lechem min hashamayim, lima'an anasenu hayelech b'torati imlo. I want to test them. I want to teach them, and I want to see whether they're willing to follow my laws. And what follows is a description of how the man operated. And it had special laws, and also special properties that defy the laws of nature, but I think are clearly meant to teach a lesson. And it's a lesson that although we no longer have the opportunity to eat man, the lessons are still very, very much relevant. Let's take a look. So, I'm sorry? The man anasenu. In order that I will test him. I will test them. Will they follow my hayelech b'torati imlo? Will they follow my Torah? Or will they not? So, let's see what some of these special rules and unusual properties were. If you skip down to Pasuk Tet Zayin, it says, Zeh hadavar asher tzivah Hashem. This is Moshe talking to the people. Right? They woke up the first day and they said, Manu. So they called it Man. What is that? Right? I grew up in New Jersey and there's this place nearby called Staten Island. So I was told when I was a kid that the reason it got called that is that people didn't know what it was. They said, Staten Island? So it was. But that's what happened with the man. They said, Manhu, what is that? And someone said, exactly, Manhu, it's man. I'm not making this up. The Torah says this. We said there's no jokes in the Torah. Okay. Fine. So the people said, Manhu. So the people said, Manhu. And Moshe said, but it's Pasuk Tevav, Vayomer Moshe Alehem, Hu Halechem. You want to know manu? You want to know what that is? It's man. It's the bread that Hashem's given you. And this is how it's going to work. Zeh hadavar asher tziva Hashem. Liktu mimenu ish lefi achlo. Omer lagugolet mispar nafsho techem ish lasher biyahalo tikachu. The entire desert, as far as they could see, was covered with man. An unlimited supply. And Moshe told them, everyone has to go out. These people were starving. And they had families to feed. And there's now miraculously, an unlimited supply of food across the entire desert. And they're told, you're allowed to take a certain quantity only. Omer la gulgolet. That's enough. One omer, one quantity for each person in the family, and that's enough to feed the person for one day, and that's all you're allowed to take. Now go do it. Perhaps not all that surprisingly, the people didn't necessarily follow this instruction. Many people tried to take more. Some people also, interestingly, tried to take less. They were lazy. Some people were very, very zealous and wanted to work extra hard to really, really store up provisions for their families. And other people weren't so, I don't know if they were lazy or whatever, but they didn't work so hard. And the next pasuk tells us, pasuk yudzayim vayasu kein b'nei Yisrael vayilketu, they went out and they gathered, hamarbeh vehamamit. Some took more than they were supposed to, and some took less. They didn't all follow the command. And guess what happened? Vayamodu ba'omer, they came home, everybody brought back their man, and they measured it. V'lo he'edif hamarbeh, v'hamamit lo hechsir. Ish lefiach lo lakatu. Some people tried to take more than they were supposed to. Some people tried to take less than they were supposed to. And when they got home, they all saw that they had actually taken exactly the right amount. We have here an unusual commandment. Go out and collect only what you need for one day. Not anymore. And we have a miraculous property of the man that even when you don't follow that law, and yesh laniach, one can assume that God sort of expected that the people wouldn't follow the law, that even when you don't follow the law, the man responds anyway. And the lesson of that is, I think, so crystal clear. Because you see, we don't live on man. We live on our paychecks. But every morning, we also have to go out of our tents and try to gather man. Some of us do it in an office. Some of us do it in a factory. Some of us do it in a storefront. Wherever we earn our living. But the way the world works, God decides how much we're going to get. V'lo he'edif hamarbeh, v'hamamid lo hechsir. People, the Gemara tells us that it's predetermined on Rosh Hashanah exactly how much income we're going to have for a year, and nothing we do is really going to change that. There are certain exceptions, money you spend on Shabbos comes from a separate account, whatever, the Gemara has a whole calculation. But, and if you give money to tzedakah, you get that back too, but the fundamental principle is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has already decided, or is deciding now perhaps, in these Yemei Din, what's going to be. And a person who decides, I'm going to work extra hard, more than necessary. I'm going to stay extra hours and put in extra effort because I know that that way I'm going to beat the system and get more money. It's not going to work. And somebody who puts in a little bit more of a minimal effort, especially if he's devoting his attention to other things, to Torah, to mitzvot, is not going to lose out by that. But notice one thing. The guy who went out of his tent and took extra man didn't benefit. The guy who went out of his tent and took a little bit less didn't lose. But if someone sat in their tent and didn't go out at all, it doesn't say they got anything. Right? You have to put in the effort. You have to do your part. You have to go out and gather. But ultimately, hama'adif, lo he'adif hamarbeh v'hamamit lo hechsi. That's the first lesson of the man. You have to do your part. If you don't go out and gather, the man doesn't come delivered to you. You know, it's not room service. Right? The man doesn't come delivered to your doorstep. You have to go out and get it. But, so it is dependent on your effort. But the results are not dependent on your effort. Your job is to do, is to put in your effort. And God takes care of the rest. And this is the balance between what some of the later Bali Musar and contemporary Bali Machshava refer to as Hishtadlut versus Bitachon, The Chazon Ish spoke about this, and Rabbi Eliyahu Dessler spoke about this, and others spoke about it as well. And there are different opinions about exactly where that balance lies, and how much effort you're supposed to put in, and how much you're supposed to rely on God. But anybody, I think, agrees, and I think that's one of the first key lessons that's coming out of this section here, is that you need some of each. There needs to be at least a minimal amount of effort. It doesn't happen by itself. But the result is not directly proportionate to the effort. The result is dependent on what Hashem decides. That's the first lesson. And then, Pasuk Yutet, Moshe gave them a second command, which is also very, very troubling. Again, remember, these people were starving. And they had just been given food, and they were only allowed to take enough for one day, even though there was an unlimited supply outside. And they had children that they were going to put to sleep at night, and they were going to have to know that their children were going to wake up tomorrow morning and they needed to feed their children breakfast. And what would a good parent do who wants to sacrifice for their children? The parent would probably say, you know what, I'll give my children their food and I'll eat a little bit less. I'll eat only half of it and put the rest aside. We learned that halacha on Pesach. On Pesach we eat matzah, which is lechem oni, poor man's bread. So how do we eat it? What do we do with it? We break it in half, right? Why? Because that's the way a poor man operates. If you give a poor man a loaf of bread, he's not going to eat the entire loaf because he doesn't know what's going to be tomorrow. And these were poor people right now. So their natural instinct is to save some of it. And what did Moshe Rabbeinu tell them? Vayomer Moshe lehem, ish al yoter mimenu ad boker. You're not allowed to leave anything over till the morning. Eat it all today. And guess what? Below Shamuel Moshe, they didn't listen to that command either. Vayotiru anashim imenu ad boker. People left it over till tomorrow. And guess what happened? Vayarum tolaim vayivash. They woke up in the morning and everything they saved spoiled. It was filled with worms. So they said, well, I should have eaten it yesterday. I wound up with nothing anyway. But it's okay. Because in the morning, guess what was outside? A whole new crop of mine. And again, there's a very, very powerful lesson in this. It's not an easy thing to go to sleep at night with a bare cupboard, whether that's literally a bare cupboard or whether that's figuratively the case. And certainly the lesson is not that we're not supposed to plan and we're not supposed to be responsible. We spoke about that a minute ago. You have to be responsible and you have to plan. But because also Chazal teach us, Ein somchin al anes. You're not allowed to rely on, expect miracles. But the bottom line is, there are times in life that the best laid plans don't always work out. And sometimes a person comes to a situation where the future is uncertain. And I don't have, I cashed in my savings plan already. And I'm starting to take from my line of credit. And not because I'm being irresponsible, but because I don't have any other options right now. And when I look to the future, I don't know what's going to be. And that's frightening. But the lesson of the Man is, or one of the lessons of the Man, is that a person has to learn how to do that. If that's the situation, you have to be able to go to sleep without knowing what's going to be. And although it's important to plan long term, we also have to recognize that we're not always able to do that. What do we say in our tefillot every day in our Shmona Esrei? We ask Hashem, Barech Aleinu et Hashana Hazot. Right? Please take care of me now. The future, I would feel very, very happy if I knew I had a bank account and all kinds of savings plans. But that's not always possible. And perhaps it's not even always spiritually desirable. The Man teaches you, a person has to realize, ultimately, the person who gave me man this morning can give it to me tomorrow morning also. And if I took more today, it might have just shrunk. If I tried to save it over till tomorrow, it might just spoil. And in the end of the day, I have to do my part, I have to be responsible. But in the end of the day, I have to know that the lechem min hashamayim, that's where it's coming from. And that's the source for everything. And finally, one other lesson of the man. The man acts differently when it comes to Shabbos. After a few days of this, the people finally got used to it. But then, Pasuk Chavet, Vayhi Bayom HaShishi, Laktu Lechem Mishneh, Shnei HaOmer LaEchad. On Friday, the Chazal tells the man began to fall on Sunday. So by now, this is a routine. They've had already 5 days of this. They go out on the sixth day, and the people took Lechem Mishneh. They took double amounts. And if you read carefully earlier, Moshe had told them to do this. But the Nesiim, the heads of the tribes, apparently didn't realize that, and they got upset. And Moshe said to them, no, this time the people, and it didn't shrink either. They came home, and this time, everybody actually had double. And Moshe said, that's actually correct. Vayomer aleihem, hu asher diber Hashem, Shabbaton, Shabbat Kodesh Lashem Machar, Pasuk Chav Gimel, Et Asher Tafu Eifu, Vet Asher Tevashlu Bashelu, Vet Kol Ha'odev, Hanichu Lachem Nemishmeret Araboker. Today Moshe said everything's different. Why did they take double? Because one is for today, and the other is for tomorrow. Cook it today, prepare it today, and do what with it? Put it on the blech, and leave it for tomorrow. I thought you can't do that with man. Well, you can't. Except on Friday night. On Friday night, you can. Pasuk Chavdal, Vayanichu oto araboker kasher tziva Moshe, v'lo evish, v'rima lo aitavo. Shabbos morning, they got up, and guess what? The man was fine. It hadn't spoiled. Man operates differently on Shabbat than it does the rest of the week. Because on Shabbat, it's not going to fall. But of course, there were people who didn't believe that either. Vayhi, last pasuk on the page there, pasuk Chavzayim, Vayhi bayom ha-shvi'i yatsu min ha'am l'lkot, v'lo matzau. Some people went out Shabbos morning to take more, and guess what? It wasn't there. The connection between man and Shabbat, we remember to this very day, with several halachot that we observe every single Shabbat that are meant to remind us of this connection. The three meals that we eat on Shabbat are in memory of the man. The lechem mishneh, the double loaves that we make a bracha on each meal of Shabbat, is in memory of that. According to some, the covering that we place over the challah is also a reference to the man. And the parallels between the man and our everyday lives when it comes to Shabbat are also very, very true. Shabbat is a paradox. Because for 6 days, the way you earn a living is by working. And then on the seventh day, the way you earn a living is by not working. And that's the same thing that happened with the man. 6 days, if you don't take it, you don't get it. The seventh day, you only take it, you only get it if you don't take it. And the Shabbat, you know, and in different times and places, when my grandfather, Alva Shalom, came to the United States from Poland, it was a very, very big nisayon. It was very, very difficult to keep Shabbat. And people, in those days, in the early 20th century, in New York, people who weren't willing to work on Shabbos would be fired from their jobs. And you'd get a job on Sunday morning if you were willing to. And if you quit on Friday, if you told the boss on Friday you weren't coming to work, that means you quit and you'd have to look for a new job Shabbos morning, Sunday morning. And sometimes some people lived up to this test and others did not. Something that I think nowadays most of us can't even relate to. But the test of the Shabbat and ultimately the message of the Shabbat is exactly the same message of the man. Shabbat teaches us that we're not the ones who are in control. And if we work all week, And we're successful, thank God. It's thank God that we're successful. It's thanks to God that we're successful. And the same way he tells us, Sheshet Yamim Tavo Besita Kom Lachtecha, so we work for 6 days. When it comes to the seventh day, we don't work. And that's not counterproductive. To the contrary. It acknowledges that thing. I just want to take 2 more minutes, and if you flip over the page, I want to show you another part of the Torah that also references the man. In a very different historical circumstance. Now we're in Sefer Dvarim. Sefer Dvarim is almost 40 years later. And now Moshe Rabbeinu is at the end of his life. And now he's speaking to a generation that has been eating man for the last 40 years. Most of the people he's speaking to have never known a different life. Anyone under the age of 40 for sure has been eating man since they were born. Maybe some of the older people there remember in their childhood what it was like in Mitzrayim. But they've been eating man for 40 years. And they're on the threshold of the Promised Land. They're about to enter Eretz Yisrael. And when they're going to get into Eretz Yisrael, the man is going to stop. And they're going to live a very different type of existence. And he tells them, Pasuk Aleph here, Dvarim Parakhet, Kol HaMitzvah, Asher Anochi Mitzavcha Hayom Tishmerun Lasot, Pasuk Bet Vezacharta, Et Kol HaDerech, Asher Olichcha Hashem Elokecha Ze Arba'im Shana Bamidbar. Remember, when you're going into the land, remember what it was like these last 40 years. Where Hashem took you through the desert, Leman anotcha linasotecha. He did this to test you. Ladat atasher bilvavcha hatishmor mitzvotav imlo. For the last 40 years, God was testing you to see if you would listen to His rules. What's He referring to here? Where did we see those words already? Leman anasenu ayelech b'torati. That was the man. And he references it explicitly in the next pasuk. Vayaancha vayarivecha. He made you suffer and he made you starve. Vayaachilcha taman asher lo yadata v'lo yaduna botecha leman odiacha ki lo ala lechem levado yichyeha adam ki al kol motza pi Hashem yichyeha adam. Moshe tells them now, why has Hashem done this to you for the last 40 years? It was to test you and it was to teach you. What we said at the outset, the man wasn't just a way to provide food. It was an educational device to teach us this lesson. And what's the lesson? Ki lo ala lechem levado yichya hada. Ki im al kol motza pi Hashem. But there's an interesting phrase here also. Both in Pasuk Bet and Pasuk Gimel, not only is it said that the man is going to test us, l'nasotcha, but the word inui is also there. Vaya'ancha vayarivecha. What's vaya'ancha? What's inui? We know that word from Yom Kippur we just observed a week and a half ago. What's inui? What? Afflict. Suffering. God made you suffer. And how did He make you suffer? So in Pasuk Gimel it says, Vaya'ancha vayarivecha vaya'achilcha taman. He made you suffer by making you starve, and then He solved your problem by giving you the man. And that was to teach you a lesson. But in Pasuk Bet, so in Pasuk Gimel, the inui, the suffering, referred to the starvation that preceded the man. But in Pasuk Bet, it says that the man itself made you suffer. He took you through the desert, leman anotcha lenasotecha. How did the man make us suffer? Where was the suffering in the man? There's a number of answers to this question, but one of them might be the psychological difficulty that we were just speaking about. The requirement to not be allowed to take extra, to not be allowed to save things over for tomorrow morning, to have to go to sleep every single night without having any food in the cupboard to give your children in the morning, and having to just rely on Hashem, that perhaps is the suffering of the man that taught you this lesson. But then he says, Moshe, things are about to change. This period of time in which you've lived this way is about to end. And things are now going to be different. Pasuk Zayin, Ki Hashem Elokecha Meviyacha El Eretz Tova. Now you're going into a good land, not a desert any longer. Eretz Nachalei Mayim. Ayanotu tomot yotzim babika uvahar. Eretz chita useora vigefen uteina virimon. Eretz zeit shemen udvash. Eretz asher lo bimiskenut tochal balechem. Lo techsar kolba. You're going to a land now that's filled with water. It's not like the desert. It's a land with seven beautiful species. Delicious, plentiful. Asher lo b'miskeinut tochal balechem. You won't eat the bread of poverty any longer. Lo techsar kol ba. You won't lack anything. You're going to live now a different type of existence. Until now you've lived the life of poverty, or at least a potential poverty. You've lived the life of a person who has nothing and is dependent on direct handouts from Hashem every day. And that taught you how to relate to poverty. But now, you're going to be faced with a different opportunity and with a different challenge. With the challenge of wealth and prosperity. Now you're not going to be lacking. Your cupboards are not going to be bare. Lo techsar kolba. Nothing will be lacking for you. And therefore, what must you do? Look at the next pasuk, pasuk yud. V'achalta, v'savata, uveirachta at Hashem Elokecha la'aretz ha'tova asher natan la. This, of course, is the mitzvah of Birkat HaMazon. A mitzvah that one of the only brachot we say, which is from the Torah itself, and a bracha which has a very interesting condition. It's said only, not only when you've eaten, but only when vi'achalta min haTorah. Midrabanan, we have to say it even if we're not in this state. But the mitzvah min haTorah is vi'achalta v'savata uveirachta. Dafka, a person who is satisfied. The exact opposite of the situation in the Midbar. A person who's full. He's had a good meal. I think on Sukkot, by now we all know what that means. Right? To have eaten and eaten and eaten. Kedei Sviya. That's when the command comes with Veirachta Hashem Elokecha. And the Torah continues. Hishamer lecha pen tishkach et Hashem Elokecha. Levilti shmor mitzvotav u'mishpatav v'chukotav. Asher Anochi Mitzavcha Yom. Don't forget about Hashem. Pen tochal v'savata. Because what's the danger? The danger is that when you eat and you are satisfied, uvatim tovim tivne v'yashavta, and you build nice homes for yourselves, uvikarcha v'tzoncha yir biyun v'kesef v'zahav yir belach. Right? And you've just come home from a really good restaurant, and you've parked one of your three cars in the driveway, and you're in the house now, in a very comfortable surrounding. Viram, pasuk yudalad, what's the danger? Viram levavecha, you'll begin to become arrogant. Vishachachta et Hashem Elokecha, hamotziacha me'eretz Mitzrayim v'beit avadim. You're going to forget about the fact that once you were a slave and God took you out. Hamolicha b'midbar agadol v'anora, nachash sarach v'yakrav v'tzimaon asher ein mayim. You're going to forget about this desert. And how God protected you when you had nothing, and we were taken through this dangerous situation. Hamachil chaman b'midbar shelo yadun avotecha leman anotcha leman nasotecha leheitiv chavachritecha. And you're forgetting, you're going to forget about how God fed you man, how God fed you man to make you suffer, so that He would test you, so that you would learn. The lesson that you now understand, the danger is you will forget. Don't, and what's going to happen, v'amarta b'lvavecha, you'll say to yourself, you'll allow yourself the delusion. You'll tell yourself, kochi v'otzem yadi asali et hachayil hazeh. Don't let that happen. V'zacharta et Hashem Elokecha ki hu anoten lecha koach lasot chayil. Recognize, make sure that's not true, and then it tells us that if chalila, we forget this message, and we don't learn this lesson, then He's going to have to teach us the lesson again. He's going to have to throw us out of this land and put us back into a situation of poverty. So, the lesson of the man is how to relate to the need for parnasa when we're challenged and we don't have it. And this parsha, which references the man, shows us how to relate to parnasa when Baruch Hashem we do have it. And that's through Birkat HaMazon. That's through v'achalta v'savata uveirachta Hashem Elokecha. And that brings us right back to Sukkot. That brings us back to v'samachta b'chagecha, and that's the din on the mayim. At a time that when we have it, the same way that when we don't have it, we have to understand that there's only one place to turn to, and yes, we have to do our hishtadlut, and we have to go out and try to get a job, and we have to work hard, and we have to do everything, but we have to understand that that's not really what's going to make it happen. What's going to make it happen is a decision of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Also, when we do have it, we have to recognize where it came from, and that's what's going to determine, ultimately, whether we're going to have it or not. And therefore, what have we come to? There is, in fact, a key to Parnassah, and although we don't have the key, that doesn't mean we have no control over it. Because the key is in God's hands. And if you read this perek, and the perek, these two prakim that we just read, Hashem tells us what He wants from us. He holds the key. And He tells us how to react. So when I go back to my friend Eli Lassen's comments to me, and I told him they're both true. What's the sgula? What's the special secret for Parnassah? So first of all, go out and get a job. That's true. And then he says, what about baking a key into your challah? I don't know where that minhag came from. I did a little research. I haven't gotten to the bottom of it. But I'll tell you one thing. If what that does, if you think that that's some kind of magical potion to give you divine blessings, then the most charitable thing I can say is that's ridiculous. And there may be some halachic terms like Darkei HaEmori, and possibly Chukat Akum, and maybe bordering on Avodah Zarah itself that might come out of that. But if a minhag like that, what it assumedly was meant to do, helps you visualize as you're eating the chalot and the which reminds you of the mat, and if there's a key in there that reminds you that the key to Parnassa is up in Shamayim, then perhaps it's a good minhag. I don't know. But one thing I do know is that ultimately the key to Parnassa is in Hashem's hands, and our job is to internalize that and to recognize that and to know how to place our trust in Him. And when we thank God are blessed with things, it has to be thank God we're blessed, and we have to know where to turn that to, and not to fall into the trap that's laid out for us here of the person who becomes arrogant and forgets. So whether it's the poor person who's asking for his bread, or whether it's the wealthy person who's able to eat v'savatu v'rachtat Hashem Elokecha, either way, that's the lesson. And perhaps we'll close with the pasuk that the Gemara in Tanit there quotes, the pasuk which teaches us that the mafteach of Geshem is in Hashem's hands. And that's the bracha that Moshe Rabbeinu left for us at the end of Sefer Dvarim, when he tells us that if we follow God's will, and if we listen to the mitzvot, then yiftach Hashem lecha et otzaro hatov et hashamayim latet et metar artzecha biito. May we all be zocha to a good and positive din. May we be zocha here in Eretz Yisrael to a winter that's filled with rain. And girls, you will learn very quickly that here in Eretz Yisrael you don't complain when it rains. You walk outside, you look outside the window when it's cold and dark and windy and rainy, and you say Baruch Hashem and you're happy. You will learn that very quickly. That's what living here teaches you. May we be zocha to a lot of rain in the physical sense, a lot of geshem, and also a lot of gashmiut. Kein hi ratzon. There is some gashmiut.